Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Happy Wednesday. It's November 8th, day after Election Day. Can't believe it was a year ago we had a presidential election. Boy, hasn't the year flown by. Okay, speaking of Stranger Things, and this is something I don't know much about, but it was brought to my attention, and I found this kind of interesting. Sales of Stranger Things hoodie overwhelms Minnesota Science Museum. Apparently there was a hoodie, a brontosaurus skeleton showed up on a main character in the first episode of the new season of the Netflix series Stranger Things. Fans crashed the museum site trying to buy these hoodies, and I think they racked up more than $400,000 in brontosaurus apparel sales by late yesterday afternoon. That's some brisk sales. And it was on this day in 1956 the movie The Ten Commandments was released. Hard to believe. I bet Yul Brynner's agent cast his check pretty fast after he got him signed on. I'm not sure he was the best guy to play that part. Yeah, don't give me that, Bill English. But brontosaurus sales, they're making a comeback? That's hard to believe. I don't know why. I know nothing about this Netflix series. But do you, Rebecca?
It's super popular.
Oh, that I understand.
As evidenced by the sales. But yeah, I would imagine that's going to be the hottest Christmas gift out there this year.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get one.
If you can get one.
They're going extinct.
Yes. Brontosaurus apparel. I think of Fred Flintstone. I don't know why he always ordered those ribs if he knew they were going to tip his car over.
Because they're just too good, Bill.
They are awfully. That's why. They look awfully tasty.
The car tipping rib? There's a sales campaign.
Yes. All right. I just lost my pen. And Bill English is in studio, so we're going to chat with him in just a minute. And he's going to come over and pick it up for me. Thank you very much, Bill. And we're going to talk about branding yourself online. And the stuff you do online is going to stick around forever. So be careful what you post and what you say and everything else, because it's going to be part of your going forward reputation. Okay? I figure you already know that. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. We are back. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Bill English has strolled into the studio from BibleandBusiness.com.
Sauntered? I've sauntered in.
I saw it as a stroll.
Oh, did you?
We're already in severe disagreement. All right. What about using social media in the hiring of employees? Is it ethical for employers to use social media?
You know, that is a raging question.
Well,
should employers do it?
Let's discuss it. We'll even open up the phone lines. If you have an opinion on this or a question, 1-877-933-2484. And what about social media to help evaluate employees during the interview process? There's a lot of information people have about themselves online, and it's going to stick around forever.
It's there forever. There's a book called Delete, and the book talks about the problems of the internet perfectly remembering everything about us forever.
Mm. Even if it's misinformation.
Even if it's misinformation. Mm. And so there's some real problems here, and I don't know how you get around them, quite frankly, because if you're posting about yourself on the internet and you're not using the privacy tools afforded to you by Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and others, then in my mind, it's the same as throwing your information in the trash, which is in the public domain. Your trash, of course, is public domain area. So, you know, you post out there, an employer goes out and looks and sees stuff they don't like, and they decide not to hire you. My personal take on it is that you shouldn't have posted it in the first place.
Okay, so are you suggesting that it's unwise to stay away from politics and possibly religion in your posts?
Yes, I
am.
Because
a lot of people that we talk to on this program say use social media to advance the gospel.
Yeah, and you may pay a price for that. And so
nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. But at the same time, you need to be cognizant of what you're doing. What I would say is be thoughtful about what you say about the Lord and about religions. And just don't, can I use this phrase? Don't be weird.
Okay.
Don't be weird about it.
Mm-hmm.
And be thoughtful, be mature, be direct, be honest, but don't be out there.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be doing stuff that is just off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of your Christian faith. And if I were you, and this is what I have done in the last couple of years, I have stayed away from politics nearly entirely.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that I've changed my beliefs or the strength of them. It's just that I know that in my role, people are going to go and look at LinkedIn. They're going to go look at Facebook. And I've privatized Facebook as much as I can. They're still going to go look. And so if people are going out and looking and they're forming their opinions about you based on what you've posted in social media, you will forget all the things that you have posted, and you will forget the contradictions that you have posted out there.
Yeah.
And they will see them all in real time, and they'll form opinions about you as a result.
And they also say, and this is true, Bill English, that a picture is worth a thousand words. So what about when it comes to posting pictures?
Yeah, be very careful about the pictures that you post.
Mm-hmm.
So the pictures that I tend to post are of myself or my wife, you know, Kathy, us having a nice time. Those kinds of very what I would call whimsical social events.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to do memes out there where you're putting the president's picture up there and then you're writing something critical of the president underneath. You just don't want to do that.
Pictures in general, though. I mean, what's the purpose of that? I mean, why do we want to look at so many pictures of everybody?
Why do you think? It's because we want to be noticed.
Well,
we want somebody to notice us. You know, Rebecca was talking about this during the break. We want somebody to love us. Look at little kids. What do little kids do? You know, that watch me do this, and
yeah,
they do
true.
It. And watch me again. And we all have this inbuilt need to be noticed. To be admired, to be accepted, to be validated. And I think the truth is, I think we use Facebook as adults to get validation from other people. All the likes, the thumbs up, the mm-hmm. comments, you know. Boy, we feel good when people validate
yeah.
us.
Well, I need to almost recuse myself from this conversation because I'm not on Facebook. I haven't been for years and years.
You don't have a Facebook account?
No, I don't.
Yeah, you're probably smart in doing that. Do you have a Twitter account?
Well, I do have a Twitter for the show.
Yeah.
So we tweet out of this and
it's Bill Arnold at Morning Late Show.
I even write him every once
See,
in a while.
Look at that. She is just going to town on the marketing. Isn't
yeah,
that great?
Just explosion. There's a new explosion right now.
But you don't have a personal Twitter account or a personal Facebook, or you have a LinkedIn account. Right?
I do. Yeah, I do. And I'm more linked out than I am LinkedIn.
Are you really?
So, yeah, I am actually.
Yeah.
So another thing we have to be aware of is that now we have cameras on us everywhere we go. Everything we do, everywhere we go, we're pretty much being monitored and recorded, aren't we?
We are. Yeah.
I mean, is there ever a place where there's not a camera somewhere?
I can think of a few.
Yeah.
I probably won't say on the air.
No, sure.
For the most part, when you go to a mall, which I never go to malls,
okay.
I hate shopping.
Okay.
To me, it's the malls represent nearly everything that's wrong with America.
You're not ever at the mall with Kathy having a whimsical time?
No. Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. I hate malls. I don't know.
No. In fact, when I heard there was a Ridgedale and a Rosedale, I thought it was just another politician, you know, like Mondale. So.
I'll do the jokes, Bill.
All right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's all right.
But you go into most office buildings downtown, uh-huh. Minneapolis or other places.
Yeah.
You go to various, you know, there's always cameras, restaurants. Yeah, there's cameras everywhere.
And outside, too. I mean, on streets and corners just about everywhere else.
They even got cameras showing a guy going into a baggage handler belt in an airport.
Oh,
you know?
That doesn't surprise me.
No,
airports are pretty well monitored all the time.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, let's talk about some of the monsters. The Google, Facebook, Amazon, they probably know more about you than you ever would realize.
Have you ever wondered why you can search, like for me, I search for books online because I buy my books at Amazon and I read them on Kindle. So
okay.
I don't buy that many physical books anymore.
Okay.
And I'll go and I'll search out for a book on some topic. Let's just say the topic is bouncing kangaroos,
okay.
right? And so I do my search, and I don't buy anything, but I do my search.
Mm-hmm.
Next time I come back to Amazon, what are they showing me?
Bouncing kangaroos.
Bouncing kangaroos.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Now, how do they do that?
They have tracked your search.
Yes.
And they've all plugged in little ads now next time you show up with a browser, hey, what about jumping kangaroos?
And not only will they show me bouncing kangaroos, they'll show me the last three or four different searches I did of various books in those genres.
Right. And also restaurants where you took your wife, Kathy, for a whimsical night out.
That's right. And she likes those whimsical nights.
I know she does.
So, you know, you do that. The internet remembers, Amazon remembers, Google remembers, Facebook remembers. I get ads now on my Facebook. Hey, you've been friends with this person for 9 years, and here's a picture. You know, remind yourself of the great friendship you have. And I'm going, I don't even know I had that picture. I forgot all about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. As we progress as people and as we grow in our lives and as our tastes, desires, interests change, the internet doesn't track with that. It just remembers that you had this interest in bouncing kangaroos, and today you have an interest in bouncing hippopotamuses.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't remember that you don't care about kangaroos anymore. It just says, oh, you care about both now.
So, but it can be a little shocking when that picture from the toga party shows up from 9 years ago.
You know, that was you weren't supposed to bring that up.
You and Kathy with a whimsical night out. All right, well, it's 16 minutes after the hour. We'll be back with Bill English in just a minute. Minutes after the hour, Bill English is in studio from BibleandBusiness.com. We're talking about branding yourself on the internet, and just by what you post and the things you say and the pictures that go up. And you have to be careful because you never post something that you don't want to defend in court or before your spouse or best friend, huh?
Yeah, you know, and it'll remember. Sometimes we go through dark periods in our lives or we have different beliefs. 10 years ago than what we had today. And so what would have been a post 10 years ago that would make sense and would have been appropriate today, we would go, oh, no, I would never do that. And so what do you do with that? Because the internet's going to remember the whole thing and people are going to be able to pull it up and read about you and that kind of thing.
Bill, whatever happened to privacy and modesty, for goodness sake? I mean, nowadays, you know, you go buy a cup of coffee and you're basically standing at a counter shouting your phone number out.
Yeah.
You know, you're a rewards member. What's your phone number?
What's your phone number?
And you're just barking it out loud. I remember your phone number used to be like the most private thing ever.
So is that how those gals got your phone number telling me about?
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, now it's different because you're not really tracking it to a landline, to a residence. It's just a cell phone. So it's a little more anonymous, maybe a little bit more like a an email address, but it's still private information. And you just stand in public and bark it out.
You know, our culture has lost much of its sense of privacy, and that's a real problem. It's really our culture is kind of schizophrenic in that way because on the one hand, we don't want the government to track what we're doing. That was the whole hoopla with what was his name, Snowden, right? And the Glenn Greenwald book, Hiding in Plain Sight, and all that. And yet, on the other hand, we're willing to go out on Facebook and Twitter and just reveal all to the world just about in terms of our lives. And the lack of privacy in this country is a real issue, especially on the legal and political front. You would be amazed if I were to go out and just spend an hour on the internet, how much I could find out about any one person with just some good research skills and about $500.
Right, because that's all public information. And if you pay a little more, you get a little bit deeper, can't you?
Yeah. I can pull up documents that are public documents. I can get your Social Security number. I can probably get some of your account numbers at banks.
Don't.
It's not hard to do.
Don't.
Oh, I don't want your bank account.
I feel better already.
Yeah.
But it seems like there was a time, Bill, when in high school days, I probably had four pictures of myself all through high school.
Yeah.
And on any given weekend, people will post up to 100 pictures from their weekend alone.
Yeah.
On the internet. And I don't know how closely they're filtering them or if they're trying to get a shock response or whatever, but that does. Apparently, one of the undeniable truths is the internet never forgets, and the internet remembers perfectly.
Yep, the internet does never forget, and it does remember perfectly. And so if you have a sordid past that was revealed on the internet, and now you've come to Jesus Christ, and now you're moving on, that past stays there. Unlike, you know, you go back 100 years ago, somebody who had a difficult past came to the Lord, they could start fresh. They could start new. And within 5 to 10 years, people would say, oh, yeah, they were kind of like that, but now look at who they are today.
Yeah.
Today,
too much reference material now.
It's much more difficult to do that.
Yeah.
And so as you're trying to live a Christ-like life, right, you have to think about how is this going to play 20 years from now, 10 mm-hmm. years from now, 30 years from now, because the internet remembers perfectly.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why people are just so anxious to want to get their pictures and their stories and everything else out there for total public consumption for complete strangers.
Again, I think it's that, it comes back to that validation. I want you to validate me. I want you to like me. I want to be part of this community. I want to be, well, validated is the mm-hmm. only word I can think of right now.
Yeah. And as followers of Christ, I mean, your reputation and everything else, your personal brand, will be directly linked to your online activity, won't it?
Yeah, and unfortunately, or fortunately, depends on how you look at it, we are also representatives of Christ. So Christ's reputation is indirectly viewed through our online posting and our reputations that we build online, the brands that we build online. You know, two extremes to make the point. On the one hand, I could be this raving, angry guy and claim to be a Christian, and I will negatively reflect on Jesus Christ. On the other hand, I could be this nice, direct, faithful, upright guy, and that would also reflect on the reputation of mm-hmm. Jesus.
So we can pretty much count on companies using social media to look you over.
They do.
If you're going to be between a couple of candidates for a job, you get to that higher level, you're going to be scrutinized by what you have posted online.
The majority of the companies, the majority of employees and candidates will say it's unethical for the companies to do that. The majority of the hiring managers will say, no, it's out there. We're going to go look at it because mm-hmm. we can't talk to references anymore. You can't hardly talk to them anymore. Most companies don't give out references because of the legal issues involved. So now they use what you've posted about yourself. They use your own words and pictures either to support you or against you. Nice. And is it ethical? I don't know. In my mind, it's a poster beware. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is a poster beware thing.
Well, if that's going to be the case and you have some stuff on the internet that you kind of wish wasn't there, is there anything you can do?
You can go ahead and delete it.
Okay.
But Facebook, Twitter, none of them have mass delete capabilities, at least not within the UI. Maybe you can do it programmatically.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to either spend time going back and looking at all the old posts and deleting them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also, and at least on Facebook, you can set up your feed to not be indexed by Google,
mm-hmm.
and that would probably be a smart thing.
Might you anticipate in a final job interview the prospective employer saying to you, so I was on your Facebook page last night, and I saw, would they be that specific?
They might.
Okay.
And there are some people who have in their employment agreements that they are not allowed to post certain things on social media. There are actually social media rules and regulations now that employees have to follow.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't have certain things on display in your cubicle. Why would they let you put things on display on Facebook or Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, you can't go out and disparage your employer, for example, mm-hmm. online. You can't go out and talk negatively about a manager online, that kind of thing. And if you do, the chances are very good your manager's going to see that, and that's going to negatively impact your day mm-hmm. at the office.
Do you think the overall trend of social media has been a good thing or a bad thing in the big picture?
I think in the long run, it's going to end up being a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think it's going to have a wave here of 20 to 30, maybe 40 years of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people are eventually going to come around and say, this social media is not what we thought it was because there's too many negative effects. And that I think that will be in the more of the Edward Snowden, the whole debacle there that we have with the government tracking what was going on and remembering what people were doing and aggregating that information and building profiles and stuff like that. I think all of that is going to come home to roost at some point.
Interesting conversation, Bill English. Thanks so much for being here. Always love seeing you on Wednesdays. We'll take a short break. It's 26 minutes after the hour. Glad you're with me. Be back in a minute. It is half past the hour. Bill English is still sitting in the studio. We're talking about social media, and I just want to let you know, okay, we're talking about personal social media. So I don't have a personal Facebook page. I certainly have an Early Morning Late Show Facebook page, which I'm very excited about. Got very cool pictures. I put up devotions there and videos and all kinds of fun stuff. So definitely check it out. We'll take a little break for news, and then when we come back, Jamar Tisby will be with us. Be back in a minute.
Encouragement together.
I feel like being able to hear the word, not just read it, but hear it, has been really instrumental for me in helping me grow my faith and helping me to understand that this is for me. It's not something that's untouchable or unreachable. It's for me. So thanks for being there.
It's more than information. It's transformation. Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's 24 minutes until the top of the hour. I hope your day is starting well. Thanks for tuning in to the early morning late show. If you're maybe in a wilderness season today, Steve Farrar says three principles will help you turn to God when you feel stuck in the wilderness. Let's hear what they are.
I looked up a commentary on Isaiah 30, and an old scholar named H.A. Leupold said there are three principles. And the whole thing of Isaiah 30 is you're in crisis, and you're running, and you're looking for help, and we tend to run to other people or institutions instead of running to God. And that verse says in Isaiah 30, in quietness and repentance you shall be saved. And he said there are three principles when you're in crisis. He said, wait calmly. Just wait on the Lord. He's in charge. Secondly, remain quiet. Be still and know that I am God. Thirdly, maintain confidence. He who began a good work in you will bring it to completion in Christ Jesus.
Good words, Steve Farrar. Also reminds me of Exodus 14:14 that says, the Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. I like that. If you want to hear all of Steve's interview, head over to myfaithradio.com. Steve Farrar, F-A-R-R-A-R. All right, we'll take a short break, and then Jamar Tisby's with us. He's got a brand new name. We're going to unveil it in just a few minutes.
If your teen is struggling, you know the stress it brings inside a household. In fact, you might be feeling the stress right now. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. For married parents who want to help their teen through a crisis, it's critical to understand that the stress that comes with it may land squarely on your marriage. You may find that your relationship with your spouse is strained, tense, or even put in jeopardy. So make it a habit to talk through it together. See this crisis as something you must tackle together. Present a united front, get outside help if necessary, and don't blame each other for the stress in the family. Remember, parenting is not a his or her job. It's an us job. And together, you'll get through it.
Are you struggling with your teen? Take Mark Gregston's free online course, Tough Guys and Drama Queens. Go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
All right, it's 21 minutes until the top of the hour. We regularly have Jamar Tisby on, and every time we have introduced Jamar, I introduce him as the president of the Reformed African American Network. And now we've got a brand new name. Brand new name. I'm going to let Jamar himself introduce the new name. Good morning, Jamar.
Good morning. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. Okay. Drum roll, and then go ahead. What's it now called?
Well, for folks who used to know us as the Reformed African American Network, we are now The Witness, a Black Christian collective.
Awesome. And you have just brought this announcement out, and you recently sat down with Tyler and Bo and during a Pass the Mic episode and said, ask us anything. What kind of questions did you get? Anyone in particular come to mind you can share?
Well, you know what? We were sort of bracing ourselves for a lot of backlash.
Okay. And?
I'll be honest with you. Most of what we've gotten so far has been extremely positive, overwhelmingly positive, not only in volume, but also in the passion. Folks are just really excited about it. And so the questions were not really critical, and so we were glad of that. But folks were wondering why the name change. So that's one we've tried to explain again and again. And it's a matter of identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you think about names in the Bible, a lot of times a name would indicate that person's role, their mission, their identity. For instance, you know, Peter and his name meaning a rock and mm-hmm. things like that. And so we've discovered that what we wanted to be about was not simply identifying a particular theological stream, but we wanted to be about something more universal in terms of Christianity, which is we're witnesses. We talk about who God is and what he's done in our lives, and we try to share that with the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jamara, I don't know, have you recently moved?
Well, in fall of 2016, I started a PhD at the University of Mississippi.
And that's so, right. So you're in the Deep South, aren't you?
That is absolutely right.
So a black man moves to the Deep South and pursues a PhD. What is that teaching you about race?
Well, I think you may be referring to an article.
Maybe I am. I'm a sneaky little guy, aren't I?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to write an article on Vox. They have a section called First Person where folks just kind of talk about an experience that they're having or they've had. Mm-hmm. And so I talked about being an African-American person who has moved to the Deep South, and that usually strikes people as odd because mm-hmm. the Deep South reminds so many people of the nation's worst instances of racism, whether that be lynching or the murders of the three civil rights workers during Freedom Summer, things of that nature. So most black people are trying to get out in a lot of ways. So why would someone go there? And really, for me, it was teaching. I came down here as a teacher, and so the impact I was able to have in the community through that profession was amazing, especially in a small community. I'm in a rural community. And then secondly, it helps me, I think, just always be cognizant of our nation's racial past and in many ways its present, so that we're not being overly optimistic about where we are. But it also gives me hope, because if there can be progress in the Deep South and in places like Mississippi, then there's hope and promise for the rest of the country as well.
Mm-hmm. Jamar, you made a point in your article about this little rural town that you're in, almost feeling like an island. And you described it to your friends and family. It's real down here. And that you said that's like the best I could come up with, which I found very fascinating. Yeah. Maybe you could talk just about some of the differences that you see and experience throughout your week.
It's really hard to describe to someone who's not here, because it's not just one factor. It's everything, and it's the combination of factors. So, for instance, my commute to school several times a week is literally through cotton fields. Wow. And so a big part of my fall is watching these cotton plants grow, watching them bloom, seeing them get harvested. And that takes you back as you remember slavery and plantation life and even sharecropping moving forward in history. But it's also little things, right? Like, it's a small town, and so a store may have hours posted. It may or may not follow those store hours. Mm-hmm. You just never know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small, tight-knit community, and that's something you have to get used to. Folks, I mean, like to wear camouflage. Hunting gear is a fashion statement. You can go to the dentist in it. You can go to church in it. And coming from the Midwest, that just wasn't something I was used to.
Yeah, I love to purposely bump into people wearing camouflage and go, hey, sorry, I didn't see you.
I have to try that one.
Yeah, you can give that a try. Jamar, let me take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. I'm speaking to Jamar Tisby, and we will be back in just a minute. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. Good morning. Glad to see a little sunshine here in the upper Midwest. I'm speaking to Jamar Tisby. He used to be the president of the Reformed African American Network, and now he's the president of The Witness, a black Christian collective. He's also, he writes about race, religion, and culture, and he's the co-host of Pass the Mic podcast. He's a doctoral student in history at the University of Mississippi. We're talking about him living in the Deep South right now. So you've joined us at a nice place of the conversation. Jamar, we just had, of course, the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Is Reformed theology, is that for black people? Refer to another article you wrote.
Exactly. It was a big week, the last week of October for publishing articles for me. So I did publish an article over at Religion News Service, and it was entitled "Is Reformed Theology for Black People?" Sort of a reflection on the anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. Mm-hmm. And insofar as Reformed theology is biblical, then it's for not just black people, it's for any Christian. It's for anyone who wants to access the truth of the Bible. But we also have to acknowledge that theology comes out of a context. And Reformed theology, as we tend to practice it in America, came out of a mostly Western European, North American, white, male context. And there's nothing wrong with that. But oftentimes they don't have the specific questions and issues of other people groups in mind. And so I just reflected on that and really what the Reformation looks like or would look like in the 21st century. And as I understand it, it would be a much more racially and ethnically diverse one. In fact, it might be one that's even led by racial and ethnic minorities. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of reflected on that.
Were there white Reformed pastors that did not address certain things that the black community would say, "Hey, you're not reaching us. You're not talking to us."
Well, African history and African American history is not just the history of slavery. We have a long history on the continent of Africa, but mm-hmm. if we're talking about the United States, then one of the things we do have to talk about is race-based chattel slavery, which a lot of people hear that and say, "Oh, that was in the past. That's gone. Can we just move on?" Well, the issue is this collective memory of suffering as well as the ongoing effects of it. And so if you look at all kinds of indicators from education to healthcare to wealth, it tends to fall disproportionately along racial lines, and the negative effects tend to fall disproportionately to African Americans, and there's this sense of collective marginalization. And what has happened is that the church has come along in the midst of that oppression and said, "God has an answer." And so what I think Reformed theology is missing, or what the black church can add, is a sense of theodicy, as they call it in theological circles. This reason for suffering and how to get through it is one particular distinctive we have. But there's much more. You know, there's a rich preaching and singing tradition, as well as an ecclesiastical tradition. And so I just think that we are one body. And that means more than just our particular spiritual giftings. That means what do different branches of the church have to offer the rest of the church that can make us see God more clearly.
Mm-hmm. Jamar, certainly the church is suffering right now as we are processing the shooting in Texas. Maybe you could give some of your thoughts on that.
Seeing that news, heavy-hearted, it's almost a physical feeling, right?
Mm-hmm. Where, oh, I'm with where, you.
It's just so tragic, and to see how many young people, how many children were killed, and it's even more striking because it's a church, it's a place of worship, and it's supposed to be for Christians our sanctuary and our refuge and a place where we reconnect with one another and with God. And so to violate that sanctity with violence strikes us, particularly as Christians, even more deeply. And then as brothers and sisters in Christ who are united by the Spirit, we have never met these people, most of us, but we still, in a sense, feel the loss as the loss of family members. And so I think there's a deep mourning and lamenting. But as I was reflecting on it, I was reminded that the metaphor that God uses is that we are a living temple, and that each of us are living stones with Christ himself as the cornerstone. And so while violence and acts of hatred, people may try to violate that by entering a physical edifice and causing harm, we also have to remember that the church is more than a place, it's a people. And so as long as we as a people are united by the Spirit and support one another, pray with one another, and act, then as God promised, the gates of hell will never prevail against his church.
Mm-hmm. Jamar, we have 53 days left until the end of the year, and 2017 is behind us already. How are we doing as a church in race relations in the year 2017?
I'm encouraged by the fact that we're having these conversations. We're talking not only about race and racial reconciliation, which would mean integration, can we worship in the same space, but we're also having, I think, substantive conversations about justice and looking at the ways that our everyday life actually reinforces patterns of segregation and separation. Now, talking is different than doing. Mm-hmm. Talking is doing something, but it doesn't necessarily change the status quo. And so, you know, I think one of the things that we need to think about is how we as Christians not only preach about these things, not only discuss these things, but how we move. I mean, we're just off of a night of elections. Mm-hmm. And although the church is not politics, it's not partisan, it should be concerned about politics in the sense of this is how we do life in this country together. And so I think Christians need to be very informed politically to fulfill their duties as citizens, which hopefully will lead them to act in ways that are loving and merciful toward their neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Jamar, I don't spend much time in black churches. So, you know, with the GOP looking at repealing the Johnson Amendment, is there in black churches a tendency of talking about politics from the pulpit? Does that surface with some frequency?
It, just like any other church, for any other racial or ethnic group, it's going to depend on the churches. Some I've been to have a strict policy of not mentioning it at all. Others are very vocal about it. One of the things that I think folks in majority white churches should understand is that when it came to community organizing, when it came to discussing politics and deciding as a group, you know, what stances would be best for the community, the only place black people could do that for a long time mm-hmm. was the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so this stark separation between the sacred and the secular, or religious and political, wasn't there because the church building itself was the only place you could meet to have debates and discussions as well as to worship.
Right.
And so I think you still see that in the sense of in black churches, a lot of times there isn't this kind of knee-jerk reaction against politics or mentioning something political like a vote or whatnot. So I imagine that in a lot of places, especially in states where there are big seats up for grabs, that these are conversations that are being had in some sense.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to correct our contact books, because now to get to Jamar's website, you want to go to thewitnessbcc.com. So you're going to have out the Reformed African American Network and then now replace it with thewitnessbcc.com. And it'll take you right there, and you can hear the podcast there and also get Jamar's blog and writings and keep in touch with him there. So, Jamar, thanks so much for being back on the show.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Have a great day. It is 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and then wrap up the big show. Be back in a minute.
Early to bed and early to rise. Well, you're going to need the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio to find out what you missed.
That wraps up our big show. I want to say a special thanks to Jamar Tisby, which I'll soon be calling him Dr. Jamar Tisby, and Bill English, who is with us in the second hour. And I can't believe he's still hanging around the studio. There he is.
I'm here.
You know, it's like that relative from Toledo. They just never leave. So, Bill, you got a little verse for us on the way out this morning.
You know, I was reading in my devotions this morning in Psalm 39, verse 6. Man is a mere phantom as he goes to and fro. He bustles about, but only in vain. He heaps up wealth, not knowing who will get it. Let's not chase wealth. Let's chase the Lord.
Amen, brother. So glad you were with us this morning, and thanks for sticking around. It's great to have you as company here in the studio.
You bet.
Thanks to Rebecca and Paul for a great show, and also to all of the listeners and supporters of Faith Radio. Just love you, and love that you tune in the morning, and keep it here all day, because you get Neil Staveham at noon and Susie Larson in the afternoon, And I'll be back in the morning. So have a great day. Tomorrow, I get to interview Dr. Tim Keller. Okay, so looks like a sleepless night for me. See you in the morning. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.